Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 92-year-old Ivan Wolgamuth of Reedley, California. Born in Oklahoma, he came to California in the wake of the Dust Bowl. His Mennonite faith made him a conscientious objector in the Korean War, so he did not carry a weapon. Unless, of course, he was given one of his buddies a break, as we heard. As a medic with the 212th Neuropsychiatric Unit of the 123rd Medical Holding Company, he not only dealt with all the weather conditions Korea was famous for, but also some extreme cases of soldiers dealing with what we recognize now as PTSD.
And as far as your day-to-day in Korea, I know you've got some great pictures of it, and you talked about some of the conditions you had to deal with, the bitter cold in the winter and the hot humidity in the summer. But on a day-to-day basis, what kinds of things were you guys doing?
Well, first we had the open wards when they would bring guys in. We called them choppers, not helicopters, and go out there and run out and get them their stretchers. They were on the outside. They could carry one on each side of the choppers and bring them in, and they were evaluated by the doctors, and some they thought just should be in an open ward. In other words, food and exercise and medical help would help them. And then we had a closed ward, which was a Quonset metal building. And for a while I was in charge of that, and we had to watch them, those people, day and night. And I remember one person was in there. He was a black man, strong as all get out, and they had him tied to the bed. He could just make it rock, and he says, if you ever are given some dope, don't take it, but just kill him. He's not worth anything to you. In fact, he said he would kill me if he could, but he was tied down. Well, afterwards he got better, and he was taken loose, and he said, you know, Ivan, he says, I love you. You're a good man. And we had those kind of people too. We had to be very careful that we would, if they could get a mirror or anything, they could cut their wrists. And in a way, that was a kind of a good experience to see that part of life too.
Yeah, but challenging, I'm sure. And you mentioned it earlier that you were part of a neuropsychiatric unit, so I'm sure people imagine some of the stuff you're dealing with. But you're seeing guys who really could be you, right? Similar age to you and in the same army, who whatever they've been through has altered their awareness and consciousness to the point that they needed you guys. How much did that weigh on you, just seeing human beings in that kind of predicament?
Well, we were just there to try to help, and I know some of the doctors felt that I had training in this electroshock treatment, and the doctor would give the electric shock, but we had to hold their hip and not, because they would jerk so hard, they didn't want them to break a hip or their leg, and so I'd see that, and then we had insulin shock therapy. They give person enough insulin that they go into shock, and then they give them glucose to bring them out again. And those you have to really be careful to watch it. And just at the right time, they need that glucose to bring them out. I think back of my time in the Army, and I'm very happy and proud that I could be there.
What would you say was the most challenging aspect of your 2 years in the Army?
Some of the most fearful times were we had these potbelly heaters with a chimney, tin chimney going up through this roof, and we would use those potbelly heaters to get warm. We'd put our arms around, kind of, and then the chimney, we could take our caps and iron them that way, just put them on the... But when the wind came, I was always afraid that they would burn up, you know, they would break apart the chimney, the parts, but never did happen. And so I know other tents burned down, but in a way, I don't think I, other than that, had any real fearful moments.
Well, you told us about, you know, bed check Charlie throwing stuff out at you too. You mentioned trying to stay warm. Do you remember the coldest temperature you endured over there?
I don't know, but I know that the Han River froze a meter thick. You could drive on it with a truck, and the Koreans would cut it with big saws and put the ice in the caves, and that would be their, in the summertime, their ice water or whatever they used it for.
And did you get to interact at all with Korean people?
Yeah, we had a houseboy, and he would help us in whatever we wanted them to do, and we got to know them quite well. We paid them, and we'd always give them a gift, you know, at different times of the year, and bring them food, because there were always Koreans where soldiers couldn't eat all the food, and they'd dump it instead of into the garbage that Korean people would want to have it. But these houseboys we treated really nicely, and actually everybody contributed some money every week or month, and that was quite a bit of money for them.
And how often did you hear from your wife while you were over there?
I think I had a letter almost every day. See, it didn't cost anything to send the airmail letters. We had an APO number, and then later on, when we were missionaries, her mother, Mrs. Zimmerman, she would send a letter almost every day too. So that was, we always kept up with news from back home.
You know where she got it from. I guess I should have asked you that too. Do you want to tell me the story of how you met your wife?
Two ways. We went to Emmanuel together. My third year, I kind of had my eye on her. And then my dad and her dad and two other men had a quartet. And she would play the piano for them. And so I would go along just to be there. So I stayed closer to her. And then during those years, we had Youth for Christ rallies every Saturday night in Dinuba High School Auditorium. And that was almost a must that I would go pick her up and take her to the Youth for Christ auditorium. Then after that, we'd go to A&W Root Beer and have a float there, yeah.
great memories, and 71 years worth of memories with her, including all that time overseas that I want to hear about. Is there anything else about your time in the Army in Korea that you think is important for us to know? One thing that I think of is, you know, how often we've heard the Korean War referred to as the Forgotten War. But you haven't forgotten, and maybe you can share a reason why you think the rest of us shouldn't forget either. Why does it matter?
You know, as you know very well, Korea still isn't united, North and South. That concerns me. And so I look at all the progress that South Korea has made. When I got there, the city of Seoul was just in rubble, and going back later, it's become a big city, beautiful city, and there is a church called the Yongnak Church right in the center of Seoul, and the minister is Dr. Han, and so we went to hear his messages and one day and one Sunday and later on in Japan there was a Keswick conference and in a city close by where we lived. Dr. Han was the speaker. He spoke English, Japanese, and Korean, and of course, he spoke in Japanese at that conference, and it was a large auditorium, all on tatami mats, and we each had a zabuton. That's a little square. That was our place, and there were two other missionaries and myself that went, and one was Ben Zerbe. He's another fellow missionary in Japan, and in a way, he spoke on the Beatitudes, and he talked about blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, and he says we Koreans have gone through a lot of persecution, but he says we also have a lot of Christians because of that. I've thought of that quite often.
It's time for our final break, but when we come back, what Ivan experienced on his honor flight to Washington, D.C. We'll also hear from his son, Terry, who followed in his father's missionary footsteps. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.